One other thing is, you know, it hardly ever happens, but sometimes people come late. So if the row of men could shift forward, that would be nice.
Just in case.
Just in case. Okay. Yes, you're going to see through your, the back of your head, or what? You're going to see that. Oh, okay. Okay. He's watching the monitor. He's okay. It's a better image than that one. Okay. So, one of the topic for the weekend, or continuing the theme of visiting Mayapur, we're going to visit the island of Koladweep, one of the nine islands in Navadweepa, is Koladweepa. And each of the nine islands represents one of the nine processes of bhakti. Who amongst our children here know what the nine processes of bhakti are? Starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam. Ramya, you know them? Can you recite them?
Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Arpani Vedanam.
Very good. You know what they mean in English? Go ahead.
Smaranam is listening.
Let's start with Shravanam, Kirtanam. That means?
Listening and chanting.
Hearing and chanting. Vishnu Smaranam.
Remembering
Vishnu. The next?
Padasevanam
means?
Serving the lotus feet.
There we are, serving the lotus feet. And what comes after Padasevanam?
Archanam
means?
Deity worship.
And then after Archanam comes?
Vandanam.
Vandanam means?
Friendship.
Prayers, right. Vandanam. And then Dasyam, Sakyam, and Atmanivedanam. Dasyam means?
Being
a servant. Yeah, rendering service. Sakyam means?
Friendship.
And Atmanivedanam means?
Complete surrender.
So we visited Antardweep before. That's the first island where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, where full surrender, surrendering everything, is the process represented by that island. And we also visited Godrumdweep, where the process of Kirtanam, chanting. So here is serving the lotus feet. Pada Sevanam. The quote here comes from Navadweep Dham Mahatmya. It was spoken by Lord Nityananda when he was showing to Jiva Goswami each of the nine islands and was describing the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes there. He said to Jiva Goswami that as much as you surrender unto the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, you'll find yourself safely in the service of Radha Govinda, directly. But the lotus feet of Gauranga will take you there safely. When a fortunate soul feels devotion for Lord Gaura's lotus feet, then the nectar ocean from Radha's lotus feet will suddenly flood his heart. In Nectar of Devotion, some of you have begun studying Nectar of Devotion, there's a description that for each of these nine principal processes of bhakti, there's a personality who exemplifies perfection in spiritual life through those nine processes of bhakti. So, Shravanam Kirtanam, who exemplified achieving perfection through Shravanam Kirtanam? Shreya?
Parikshit Maharaj,
yeah.
And Sukadeva Goswami.
Sukadeva Goswami. Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami. Shravanam Kirtanam. What about Vishnu Smaranam? Who exemplifies the perfection of devotion through constant remembrance of Krishna? Yes? Prahlad Maharaj. Very good. Prahlad Maharaj was always remembering Krishna. Rupa Goswami teaches, when there's that injunction, always remember Krishna, there's a prohibition. Never forget him. There's a verse in Padma Purana like that. The perfection of spiritual life is always remembering Krishna, never forgetting Krishna. Smartavya Satatam Vishnur. Always remember Vishnu. And never forget him. And next is Padasevanam. Who is that personality who exemplifies perfection in spiritual life by always serving the lotus feet of the Lord? Lakshmi! She's always at the lotus feet of the Lord, serving Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu. Here this is Garbhadakshai Vishnu. We know that because there's Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma appears from the navel of Garbhadakshai Vishnu atop a lotus flower that grows from his lotus stem. And the goddess of fortune is always serving at his lotus feet. She exemplifies perfection through Padasevanam. In Navadviptam Mahatmya, Lord Nityananda was explaining the glories or describing the glories of this island to Jiva Goswami and explained how the island got its name. Would you like to know how the island got its name? Like it or not, I'm going to explain it. Because Lord Nityananda did, I'm just following his footsteps. Long ago, in Satya Yuga, there's four yugas, right? Satya, Treta, Dwarapa, and then this one, the bad one, Kali Yuga. So, before Kali Yuga is which one? When Krishna appeared, which yuga was that? Dwarapa Yuga. And before Krishna appeared, when Ramchandra appeared, what yuga was that? Treta Yuga. And the yuga before that was? Satya Yuga. So long ago, in Satya Yuga, there was a brahmana who was living in Navadvip. His name was Vasudev. It's a nice name for a brahmana, Vasudev. He was pure in devotion, and he was very scholarly. And he loved to worship the Lord. He worshipped his Shalagram Shila in the mood of Lord Varaha. That was his bhakti. In the course of his studies of the scriptures, he came to understand that in this very place, in Navadvip, during the age of Kali, the form of the Lord would appear as the Yuga Avatar in Navadvip in a golden complexion, always singing the holy names of the Lord. So, with ardent devotion, he began worshipping his Shalagram Shila, the way that worship of Shalagram, according to scriptures, how the Lord, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yeyata mam prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajam yaham, which means, prapadyante means, what is prapadyante? Surrender. As they surrender unto me, mam prapadyante, Krishna reciprocates. So like on our, in our temples where there are deities of Radha and Krishna, Prabhupada instructed that we should install shalagram along with worship of Radha and Krishna. And then when there are festival days, the shalagram can be taken from the altar and we do abhishek on the appearance day of Lord Varaha or Lord Nrisimha or Lord Vamana or Matsya or Kurma, or the Vishnu avatars may be worshipped by the medium of worshipping shalagram, and shalagram accepts our worship according to our mood. So we can worship shalagram Shila, as did Vasudev. He had great devotion for Lord Varaha. But it wasn't, besides it was pure, it was what Rupa Goswami describes as with great, intense eagerness. He wanted to see that form of the Lord. And almost with despair, he was thinking, I have devotion for the Lord, but I've yet to gain His favor. Will He come and show me His transcendental form? So feeling the love of Vasudev, the personality of God had assumed His form of Lord Varaha. Huge form. And Vasudev fell at His feet and pleaded, my dear Lord, this beautiful form with lotus-like eyes, so charming. And normally the form of a boar is not something pretty to behold. It's sometimes very fearful, frightening. But this form of the Lord was so beautiful. And he offered prayers to the Lord saying that from the scriptures I've understood that you will appear not only in this Varaha form, but in Kali Yuga, in this very place in Navadvip, in a golden form. Please show me your mercy. I want to see that form. And so Lord Varaha showed his form of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu spoke to Vasudev and said, my dear Vasudev, your devotion is unprecedented. It's so immaculate and pure. I will, as I appear here in Kali Yuga, as the Yuga avatar, you will also appear here with me, and you will engage in my pastimes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the Lord disappeared from the sight of Vasudev. So Vasudev was feeling torn in his emotions between ecstatic feelings of love for the personality of Godhead showing his form, but also great separation from him. And so he pondered very deeply in his worship of Lord, of Shalagram Shila, and he then came to pronounce that this place where the Lord appeared should be known as Kola Dvipa, Kola indicating Lord Varaha. Kola is one of the names, local names for a boar, so indicating the place of the boar incarnation. Mahaprabhu had also indicated, when I appear in Kola Dweep, because of your pure devotion, here in this very place, I will grant forgiveness for countless numbers of sinful persons, for all of the sins of their past, so that they can also, like you, come to the position of pure devotion. So this is a map again of the nine islands where our ISKCON temple is right in this area, kind of at the juncture of the Ganges going this way and the tributary of the Ganges, the Jalunki, which merges with the main tributary of the Ganges right here. So in order to get to Kola Dweep from our temple, you have to cross by boat. So we have some pictures of the boat crossing. Hopefully they'll show up. This is the picture taken from one of the boats going from Shidam Mayapur. Actually, this looked like looking back. This is the Jalangi, this is the Ganga, and this is Godrum Dweep, where we saw the other day, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur resided. And this is, there's the spire of Prabhupada's Samadhi. And here's one of the boats following behind us. And there's the devotees getting on the boat to go back to Shridhar Mayapur, with the pilgrims taking their bath in the Ganga. So one of the places, we'll visit a few places in Koladweep. One of those places is Prodamaya. Prodamaya is the name in Navadweep for Yogamaya. In Vrindavan, there's a Dhameshwara Shiva and Gopeshwara Shiva. Gopeshwara Shiva is Lord Shiva in the mood of a gopi. He wanted to enter into the rasa dance, but you can't enter into the rasa dance unless you have a gopi form. So he was given a gopi form. And Krishna gave him the service, you guard this rasa stali area, so unqualified people cannot enter. So Gopeshwara Shiva is found very near to the rasa stali. And at that same temple in Gopeshwara Shiva, there's a deity of Yogamaya, because Yogamaya does the same thing. She keeps people unqualified from entering, but she allows qualified people to enter. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrata mudhoyam nabhijanati. So Krishna is saying that through his expansion of his yogamaya potency, persons that are inimical to him, they cannot see him. They cannot interact with him directly. So, but it's an expansion of his yogamaya potency, and the same yogamaya potency in reciprocation with the devotee assists the devotee to enter into the pastimes of Krishna, at least the service of Krishna. So Prodamaya, when a devotee comes to Prodamaya, the prayer is, please engage me in service to Krishna. Please allow me to enter into the holy dham of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here's the Prodamaya deity. And as in Vrindavan, there's Dhameshwara Shiva. Actually, in Vrindavan there are four for the cardinal directions. And if you can recall, when we visited Antardweep, right near the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the temple just behind where Mahaprabhu appeared by the neem tree, there's also a Dhameshwara Shiva. So this is another one of the directions, westerly direction. Lord Shiva, who's guarding the holy dham, that is, not allowing unqualified people, but by prayers giving his blessing so that qualified people can enter. So some distance away from the ghat, where the boat lands, is the Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir, both of Jagannath Das Babaji. There's a very beautiful painting of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who lived to be 140 years old. That's why his body is looking like it's looking. He was a, while living in Vrindavan, the first time that Bhaktivinoda Thakur met Jagannath Das Babaji was when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was visiting Vrindavan. Okay. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur was visiting Vrindavan, he was visiting the places of Krishna's pastimes. there, and he came to hear of one preeminent Vaishnav who was known as Sarvabhauma Jagannath Das Babaji. This title, Sarvabhauma, is a title given for those who are the most learned personalities. So Jagannath Das Babaji, even amongst the Babajis, was recognized as the most advanced. So he was given this Sarvabhauma Jagannath Das Babaji. And when title? When Bhaktivinoda Thakur met him, they just sat for days, literally for days, and just engaged in Krishna Katha and Kirtan and chanting the holy names together. That was their first meeting. The mood at the time of Jagannath Das Babaji was that I'm not qualified to live in Vrindavan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very enthusiastic. Please come and make your residence in Navadvip. I'll personally care for establishing a place for you to stay, a little simple bhajan kutir, and there by the side of the Ganga you can engage constantly in a very peaceful way in the chanting of the holy name. So Jagannath Das Babaji very much appreciated the pure devotion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he agreed to leave Vrindavan and go to Navadvip, where he resided, where we're seeing the pictures of. This is the main entrance gate. Of course, it's newly constructed, and before it was very, very simple facility. But the local pilgrims wanted to honor Jagannath Das Babaji, and so they made this ornate gate to enter into the little compound where he resided. This is his Gaur Gopal and Giriraj deities. His Giriraj deity was brought with him from Vrindavan. By the side are some Jagannath deities. Here's another nice picture. Gaur Gopal. Gaur Gopal is the same name. No. Thinking something else. Here's a close-up of his deities. Altar pictures here. And to the side of where the altar is his samadhi. See a close-up of his samadhi. And very near to that is the amurti of Jagannath Das Babaji. So it's a very, the setting is very simple, but it's always kept very clean. The pujaris there are meticulous in the care of the place. But Jagannath Das Babaji was particularly known for his absorption in chanting of the holy name. And give a little description of his chanting of the holy name. He commonly would perform this practice of chanting the holy name where for 3 days straight, without sleeping, without eating, without drinking, he would chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Coming up in every year in June, we observe Nirjalakadasi, Pandava Nirjalakadasi. That's, you know, it's an austerity for most of us. All day, no water, and chanting of the holy name on that particular Akadasi to receive the benefits of all other Akadasis, if there's been some discrepancy. But he would regularly do that for 3 days. And not only not eating and taking water, but not sleeping. Just absorb. So an ordinary person can't do that. A common practice for him during Chaturmasya, he would observe the austerity of during the first month, not just one day, but for the first month of Kartik, he would chant all day long and in the evening take 4 bananas. You know the bananas in India, they're not the big ones like we have here, they're the smaller ones. And 4 bananas. and that was it, for a month. And then during the second month, this isn't like, you know, Dhruva Maharaj and his austerities. This is a contemporary. In 1880, he moved to, it's like, you know, not so long ago, 130 years ago. During the second month, he had, you know, whatever guavas he could fit in one hand. That was what he would have in the evening, and otherwise all day long fasting for a month. And then in the third month, he would have some chash, some buttermilk, some small quantity of buttermilk once a day in the evening, and the rest of the time all day long chanting. And the fourth month, banana flowers. Doesn't say how many. Banana, not bananas, but banana flowers for the final month, Kartik month. All day long chanting the holy name. One of the descriptions in his biography is that he heard of a particular method of increasing the quality of chanting by going to Haridwar, and the austerity went as follows. One bathes in the morning before the sun rises in the cool waters of the sacred river, goes inside of a room, locks the door from the inside, and doesn't come out until at night, and take one meal at night. It is a 60-day vrata, and you're supposed to observe strict silence. If for any reason you pass air or pass water or anything else, you go take bath again. Again, it's completely observing mona vrata. So his servant was with him, and after something like 20 days into the vrata, without thinking of what he was doing, he just naturally spoke something to his servant. So because of that, he started the vrata all over again and went for 60 days. He was into the holy name. He wasn't fooling around. He was absorbed. And this is the bhajan kutir that's beside, in the backside of where his samadhi is. And at this bhajan kutir, it was just underneath a very nice shade tree. Bhaktivinoda Thakur selected the place and built his little ashram for him. But it was selected so that he could sit and gaze over the Ganga, looking at the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, inducing feelings of separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is the place, and it's described in his biography that from this place he had Krishna's darshan, that which he felt himself unqualified to experience in Vrindavan. Krishna gave his darshan from this very sacred place. So many pilgrims come and pay their obeisances to Jagannath Das Babaji in this particular location. There are many wonderful qualities of Jagannath Das Babaji that we can mention because of his intense absorption in the holy name. He had complete detachment from the world. So one time, as he was passing through Vrindavan, he received the offering of some bread from some of the worker class people. And he accepted the bread and honored it. His Babaji friends were criticizing him. They told him, they said, why are you doing this? You're taking food from a non-devotee, what to speak of, who knows what their caste is, and you're accepting that as the remnants of your food. His answer was that when Krishna appeared, he brought with him, 5,000 years ago, he brought with him his whole entourage from the spiritual world. And these persons are the descendants of those individuals, and they're residents in Vrindavan, as far as I'm concerned, they're worshipable regardless of what family they were born in. And if I can receive remnants of food from them, I consider my life to be successful. And because of the caste conscious disposition of those who are supposed to be Babaji's, meaning above any such consideration, he left that vicinity and went into deep seclusion in the forests of Vrindavan. And his servant went with him. And after some days passed, his servant was accustomed to cooking for Jagannath Das Babaji, and he was in anxiety. So Jagannath Das Babaji could detect his anxiety. He said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I'm not able to cook for you. It's days that you've been fasting. Please allow me to go and do Madhukari, and I can accept some grains and cook for you." And Jagannath Das Babaji was angry with him. He said, "You have no faith in Krishna. Take these kartals, sit under that tree and just chant." And so he sat under the tree and began chanting. And very soon, one local villager, a farmer, came, saw the two of them sitting there, and came and brought a small bag full of grain. Then another came and brought some vegetables. Another came and brought some milk, and he just continued chanting. And very soon he had everything that he needed to make a nice feast for Jagannath Das Babaji. In this way, his servant could understand the deep faith that Jagannath Das Babaji had. And Krishna is our maintainer, Krishna is our protector, Krishna is our dearmost friend. For some time he lived in Vrindavan in a place called Suryakund. Suryakund is a very transcendental place of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. It's where Radha would go to worship Suryadev in honor of receiving the blessings of Surya for her relationship with Krishna, her love, fulfilling her love for Krishna. So he somehow came across a deity of Lord Chaitanya that looked golden, so he called it Surya Gauranga. And some dacoits, they heard about this Surya Gauranga, and they thought, maybe it's gold. So they came to steal the deity. And as they were going to steal the deity, and they had the deity in their hand, and they were running from the place where Jagannath Das Babaji kept the deity to worship. Forget the details, something happened, and the forces of nature destroyed them. I forget exactly, something happened. And everybody heard, "Don't go anywhere near Jagannath Das Babaji's deity. You know what's good for you." But he was concerned that they're making a fence. And so he took the deity of Surya Gauranga and presented it to the pujaris at Radharaman, because that's in the village. And he was way out in the forest area, on the way towards Govardhan Hill. But now it's more developed than it was. Very, very rough. So the deity is now worshipped in a temple in Vrindavan, in the care of the same pujaris as take care of Radharaman from Gopal Bhatta Goswami's disciplic line. It's a very nice temple, Surya Gauranga temple. One time when he was, Biharilal was carrying him in a basket. Because he was so old he couldn't walk, so he carried him in a basket. And as he was going along the path of Koladweep, one wealthy man saw him in the basket and placed a rupee in the basket, some donation. So Biharilal kept walking, and after some time Jagannath Das Babaji told him, "Let's go back. Find the man that gave that donation." They found the man that gave the donation, and Jagannath Das Babaji handed him the rupee back and said, "It's too heavy to carry. I just don't have the capacity to carry this rupee, but it seems that you have the capacity because you have so many rupees, you must be able to carry one more. You please keep it." And as he sat at his bhajan kutir and would do chanting, people would come and offer donations. He had a little hundi, a little place where people would put. Although he was almost blind, he somehow had this clairvoyant way of knowing how many rupees were there. So one time he told Bihari Lal, there are now 200 rupees, count and make sure they're all there. So he counted, there were 200 rupees. He said, take the 200 rupees and go and buy rasgullas for all the cows and all the dogs of Navadweep. And Bihari Lal was a little bewildered and said, well, I'll be happy to feed the dogs and the cows of Navadweep, but what about all the sadhus and brahmins in Navadweep? He said that the sadhus in Navadweep, they're violating the principles of morality, and so they're less than dogs. Better you feed the bridge, the dambasis, the cows and the dogs. They're sinless. He honored them. In the place where he stays, there were sometimes dogs, and Bihari Lal would shoo the dogs away when he was coming to bring his meal. One time there was a female dog that had just given birth to a whole litter of puppies. So he was taking the puppies away, and Jagannath Das Babaji wouldn't eat. Bihari Lal was asking him, please eat. He said, how can I eat if the residents of the Dham are fasting? Bring them here. And he would have them eat right off his plate. But he was very strict about not having his remnants of prasadam distributed. He would eat everything on the plate, and sometimes he would eat the plate. Leaf plate, of course. Banana leaf. Biodegradable. One time a wealthy businessman, industrialist businessman, heard of the fame of Jagannath Das Babaji, so he came to his ashram to see him, and when he came he offered his respects and asked Jagannath Das Babaji, can you do any miracles? He was very direct. And Jagannath Das Babaji said, No, I don't have the capacity to do any miracles. And as he spoke, he picked up a stick and started banging the stick on the ground very hard. And the man thought, oh, I've offended him by asking him that question. So the industrialist asked him, have I said something or done something that has offended you? And he said, no. Right now, there's a goat at Radhakund that's eating the tulsi leaves at the samadhi of Sanatana Goswami and chasing them away. The industrialist was astonished, and because he was a wealthy man, he went to a telegraph office in Navadweep and sent a telegram to Vrindavan to find out, did this happen? Is it true? He got back a telegram saying, yes, that very day, at that very time, there was a goat that had gotten loose and was eating the tulsi leaves in front of the tulsi plant in front of Sanatana Goswami's samadhi. And later on, his associates were asking, why did you do that? He said, because the man was a faithless man. All he wanted was to see some magic. Because I have faith in the holy name, I didn't want to show him that I can do some magic. But that's all if that will help him develop some faith in the holy name, then I showed him. This particular illustration is indicating when he went at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's request to go examine the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that which he thought was the birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, And to get there, it was wild. Just like the other day we saw the pictures of the home of Bhaktivinod Thakur. I was just remembering this from seeing this illustration. When ISKCON first started developing the Mayapur temple, the year was in the early 1970s, 71, something like that was the land, 70, 71 was the land, when the land was acquired. So the devotees were just learning, like very rudimentary learning, where the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes were. So one time a group of devotees went across the Jalangi to visit Bhaktivinod Thakur's Godrum Dweep, or Svananda Sukhada Kunj. Jayapataka Maharaj said, when they went there, they saw a Bengal tiger. It was like this, it was jungle during those times. Now it's the opposite, it's becoming, you know, commercialized, developed. This is the scene looking out from the Bhajan Kutir place of Jagannath Das Babaji as he's looking across a portion of the Ganges, a tributary of the Ganges. Although Jagannath Das Babaji was Sarvabhauma Jagannath Das Babaji, most learned, in fact, was the Shiksha Guru of Bhaktivinod Thakur, and Bhaktivinod Thakur, both Jagannath Das Babaji and Gorkishore Das Babaji, also an extreme renunciate, they would come and listen to the discourses on Srimad Bhagavatam from Bhaktivinod Thakur, indicating several things. Their humility, Bhaktivinod Thakur's amazing capacity, and the fact that ashram doesn't matter, whether you're this ashram or that ashram. What matters is your Krishna consciousness. So these are some paintings that you find on the wall of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's samadhi, going to tie in kirtan with their devotees. Another predictably ecstatic place, every time we've gone, I've been there, it's been just amazing, is the temple where Vishnu Priya's deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is worshipped. Who is Vishnu Priya? Vishnu Priya was the wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the time that he accepted sannyas. And due to her intense feelings of separation from Mahaprabhu, he made an arrangement that a deity of himself would be provided for her to worship. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, he was just 24 years of age. And Vishnu Priya, being many years younger than him, was just a teenager. 16, 17, something like that. And she's the goddess of fortune. Her position was not just the wife of Mahaprabhu, but from the spiritual perspective, she's the goddess of fortune, now bereft of her husband. There's a very wonderful description found in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya about this little role reversal, that when Ram arranged for Sita to go to take shelter in the ashram of Valmiki, Ram made a golden murti of Sita, and whenever there were festivals, festive occasions, he would place the golden murti of Sita by his side as if she was presiding as the queen along with him as the king. So in this case, same as Sita is to Ram, Vishnu Priya is to Mahaprabhu. In this case, a golden form of Mahaprabhu was given to Vishnu Priya to worship. Vishnupriya's sadhana was she would constantly chant the holy name, and each time she completed one round of japa, she would take one grain of rice and place it in a bowl. And whatever, however many grains of rice she had at the end of the day, that was her meal. She would offer to her deity and accept the prasad of Dhameshwara Mahaprabhu. Here's the deity in different dresses. Look at this, looks like a sari. Because Vishnupriya saw her respected husband as her Lord, her Mahaprabhu. But Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani. It's a little, you don't find it this in any ISKCON centers, but you know, this is what they do with the Dhameshwara Mahaprabhu. Here he's dressed in a white dhoti. And situated at his feet are these sandals Vishnupriya somehow acquired. It's not in Chaitanya Bhagavata, it's not in any of our authorized biographies, but somehow it's somewhere it came to be understood that as Ram gave to Bharat his wooden shoes, somehow this legend is there that Mahaprabhu gave his wooden shoes to Vishnupriya. So in any case, they have these shoes that are said to be the shoes of Mahaprabhu, plated now in silver. And this is an illustration of the wedding of Vishnupriya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a very enthusiastic vendor just outside the main temple. They get very excited when groups of people come. Okay. Another place in Koladweep that's transcendentally nice is Champahati. Formerly, Champahati was the residence of Jayadeva Goswami, and following that, during the time of Mahaprabhu, was Dvijavaninath, and since that time, the temple of Gurgadadhar has been established. The place is called Champahati because formerly it was Champaka Hata. Hata means marketplace, and Champaka is a marketplace for champak trees because there are many, many, many champak trees, and the color of the champak tree is golden, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's said that the champak trees were so much in abundance that Champakalata, one of the Ashtasakis of Radha, would transcendentally come to this place, gather many champak trees and use them for decoration of the throne of Krishna. And the local devotees would gather these champak trees and sell them in the marketplace. So, the story behind this place, or the history behind this place, goes back a long time to the time of Jayadeva Goswami, which was a few hundred years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. This is the walkway leading to the temple. This sign indicates that the Bhaktivedanta Charity Trust built this nice little roadway leading into the temple. Established by Srila Prabhupada, they built the road going to the temple to make it easier for the pilgrims. This is the gate of the temple, and this is the walkway leading to the temple. We went at a time, there was a festival, so I had this pandal spread out in front of the temple. This is without the pandal, so you can see the temple directly. And the deity is right in the middle. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda on the two sides, but the deities are Gurgadadhar. There's our part of the assembly of the devotees and the temple area, little history of the Champahati, and there's the deities. During the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he decided to take sannyas, he informed a small number of his devotees. One of those devotees was Gadadhar Pandit in our Panchatattva. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas is the five. So Gadadhar Pandit had a brother, and his brother's name was Vaninath. He was known as Dvijavaninath, Brahmana, Dvijavaninath. And with Gadadhar Pandit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to visit Dvijavaninath to inform him that he was planning to take sannyas. And each of the, this is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, each of the persons that Mahaprabhu went to inform, according to their relationship with Mahaprabhu, they responded in different ways. None of them was enthusiastic, saying, oh great, you're going to take sannyas, we won't see you again. That's fantastic news. No one had that response, but in different ways they had their response. So Dvijavaninath's response was, he was just thunderstruck. He was unable to speak, and tears were just streaming down his eyes, speechless. His countenance expressed his feelings. And then he just broke down and began sobbing very loudly and pleaded with Mahaprabhu, please don't do this. You're my life and soul. How will I maintain my life in your absence? And my dear brother, Gadadhar, surely he'll go with you because he won't be able to bear your separation. How will my life go on? His devotion was so intense that Mahaprabhu, as was done with Vishnupriya, he made an arrangement for these deities to be carved so that he could bear his separation and bear both of their separation. And so Dvijavaninath personally worshipped these deities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar, Gaur Gadadhar. So, actually it's the other way, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is Gadadhar. As time passed, the sons of Dvijavaninath were, and the descendants of Dvijavaninath had less interest in worshipping Gaur Gadadhar than did their ancestor Dvijavaninath. And so after some time the worship went into neglect and disrepair. Then at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur being given the instruction by his father to assist him in establishing the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he was looking for this place of Gaur Gadadhar, the worship of Gaur Gadadhar, and he knew that it was in the vicinity of Champahati, but he searched and searched and nobody knew anything about it. Finally he came across a situation where way off in a remote place, even this is remote, but even further remote, was a shed. And there was one Durga worshipper that a brahmana, at once a week he would go and ring a bell and offer some water and come back. And he heard about this particular secluded place and he went there and saw in great disrepair the deity of Gaur Gadadhar. So he was heartbroken and pleaded with the brahmana, oh, please allow me to take care of these deities. And so the brahmana was happy to be relieved of that once a week responsibility. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established a very nice temple for Gaur Gadadhar. Here they are in a different dress. Very powerful deities. Gadadhars, they're dressed in a sari, because he is in the expansion of Krishna's pleasure potency, as is Radha, only in the Leela, performing the role of the friend of Krishna, his classmate and friend and so forth. And when Mahaprabhu went to Puri, Gadadhar Pandit went to Puri and remained there. Very beautiful deities, very merciful deities. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar came to Champahati, this is commemorating the place where they stayed, the deities of Gaur Gadadhar, where Gadadhar Pandit and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resided. Prior to even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance was the presence of Jayadev Goswami. And we know Jayadev Goswami best from this. He wrote Gita Govinda, and within Gita Govinda are the songs of the Das Avatars, and one of the songs of the Das Avatars we sing every day, every time we perform arti. The prayers to Lord Nrsingadev that we sing are from Jayadev Goswami. Keshava Drita Nada Hari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. It's taken directly from Gita Govinda. Here's a very old painting of Jayadev worshipping Lord Vishnu. And from Gita Govinda, an illustration of Radha and Krishna having a discussion. So these things are all described in his Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda. There's many nice things to say about Jayadev Goswami, and I won't say them all because it will take too much time. You can listen to the detailed description. But he was extremely elevated in pure Krishna consciousness, so much so that his writings, even Mahaprabhu, relished hearing, because they are pure in devotion. I just described one of them. As he was writing Gita Govinda, he came to a passage where, in his mood of devotion, Radha was in a man lila mood. She was angry with Krishna. And Krishna tried everything to pacify Radharani, give up her anger. And nothing would bring Radha to give up her anger. So Krishna came before Radha and placed his head with peacock feather at the feet of Radha, and tears were coming from his eyes, begging her to give up her anger. And as he was spontaneously, in spontaneous devotion, writing that passage, he put down his writing instrument and said, "This isn't right. He's the personality of Godhead. How can this be?" So he stopped writing. And he told his wife, "I'm going to take my midday bath, and please have prasadam ready when I come back," as was his practice. So he left. And shortly after he left, his wife saw him return very quickly. And he sat down at his writing table and picked up his writing instrument and continued writing. And then he asked his wife for his meal. And he took his meal. And he got up and left. And shortly after he got up and left, he came back again, only this time still wet from having taken his bath. And his wife said, "What are you doing? You came back, then you left." And Jayadev asked, "What are you talking about? I didn't come back, I just now came back." He said, "No, you came back before. You came and you sat at your table and you began writing and you took your meal and now you're back again all wet, just coming back from your bath. What? Hearing from his wife, he went to the writing table and he saw the very words that he was contemplating writing were written on the text of Gita Govinda. The very words. He hadn't done it. Krishna did it. Krishna accepted a form that looked just like Jayadev, so much so his wife didn't even know it wasn't Jayadev. And completed the sentence, completed the verse, then sat down and took prasad from his wife. And Jayadev was amazed. Such mercy you've received from the personality of Godhead. He's shown you his own form and taken meal from your hand. How fortunate you are. I am so blessed to have such a qualified wife. Krishna would show himself like this, but he also could understand that Krishna liked that passage. In this way, Jayadeva Goswami was on a totally different platform of Krishna consciousness than a sadhaka platform. He was perfected soul, and so his writings were also like that. Tell one other Jayadeva Goswami narration. The deity that he worshipped, he named Radha Madhava. And one time, he became very enthusiastic to make a nice festival for Radha Madhava. But he was a brahmana. He didn't have means. He wasn't a wealthy brahmana. He was just a writer. So he spoke to his wife in the following way. If I go visit different villages and sing Gita Govinda and let them know I'd like to make a festival for my Radha Madhava deity, perhaps they will give some contribution and I can receive that contribution and bring it back and we can have a nice festival for Radha Madhava. Well, principle of for a brahmana is not to use prachar as a means of maintenance. But when some service is done and the service is done to maintain one's deity, that's fine. So he did that. And he went traveling about, and when he had sufficient to have a nice festa for his deity, on his way back to his home, he was accosted by some dacoits. And they beat him, they took all of his money, and they threw him in the bottom of a well and left. Not very nice. So there's Jayadev at the bottom of a well, and this was in a remote place. So he's calling out Krishna's name, wondering, like some people might wonder, there must be some purpose for this, but I don't really understand the purpose for this. Somehow there's some purpose that Krishna has. So one day, some days had passed, and a king was passing by and heard the sound of a voice calling Krishna's name, and he searched and searched and saw the well, and down the bottom of the well was Jayadev. He didn't know who it was, just somebody at the bottom of the well calling Krishna's name. So he arranged for him to be taken out of the well and brought back to his palace to give him care, because he's one of his citizens. And after being brought back to good health, Jayadev wanted to offer some service to the king, so he was singing his Gita Govinda, and the king recognized, this isn't just somebody that fell on the bottom of the well, this is a great sadhu, a pure soul. And he asked him, who are you? And he gave his name, my name is Jayadev, and what were you doing at the bottom of the well? And the description, I was plundered, and I wanted to have a nice festival for my deity, Radha Madhava. So the king said, I will make sure that you have a nice festival for your deity, Radha Madhava. Bring your wife. Where is she staying? We'll bring her here and we'll have, right here in the palace, wonderful festival for Radha Madhava. So, in the course of the festival itself, many brahmanas came to receive charity from the king. And Jayadev saw in the audience where the dacoits, dressed as brahmanas, received charity from the king. So he pointed them out to the king. And what he told the king was, make sure they get sufficient remuneration. But what they thought was, Jayadev is telling them, get those guys, they're the ones that mugged me. So they received their, before they received the dakshin that was to go to the brahmanas, they ran for their life. And as they were running, Jayadev turned to the king and said, make sure they get sufficient remuneration, they'll be fully satisfied. Send your officers, please make sure they get. And so the officers went chasing after them, and the officers were chasing after them. They thought, oh no, now we're in big trouble. Jayadev told on us. The officers caught up with them, and when the officers caught up with them, they said, my dear sirs, your respected brahmanas, and by the order of the king, we're here to give you ample remuneration for your coming to take part in this festival. But please tell us why you're running. And so they accepted the remuneration and told some vicious lies. They said, this person that's with the king, he's very bad. I forget the story they made. Some story that said, you know, we were just moving about in the forest and Jayadev did something bad to us. And so, you know, poor brahmanas, and Jayadev is a mean guy. So they were astonished. That's not Jayadev. He couldn't do something like that. So as they were speaking, the dacoits disguised as brahmanas were drawn within the earth. The earth opened up, and they just were disappeared into the earth. And the constables of the police were terrified, and they ran back and told the king, what happened? What happened? My dear constables, what happened? He told the whole story. And the king then went to Jayadev and said, what's all this about? What's going on? And Jayadev said, those men were the ones that plundered me, cut me, threw me in the well, and took all my money. He said, well, why did you want to see that they get remuneration? Ample remuneration. He said, because even if one does some act of cruelty towards you, you should always be forgiving of them and be, in fact, their well-wisher. If the plan of the Lord is otherwise, so be it. If the Lord does not forgive them, that's His prerogative, but a saintly person should be forgiving, even of one's worst offenders. The king was saying, but you have just said what they did, and they would have been killed for an offense like this to a sadhu. That's not the life of a sadhu. The sadhu isn't wishing ill upon one's aggressors. They wish well upon them. So he didn't just write nice stories about Krishna's pastimes and have some other kind of character inside. His character and his writings of devotion were in complete harmony with one another. This is a picture of an Oriya translation of Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami. Many nice things about Jayadev. One other place in Koladweep is Samudra Gar. Samudra Gar is, as the whole of Navadweep is non-different from Vrindavan, that area of Vrindavan that Samudra Gar is non-different than is Bahulavan. And it happened to be the capital of Samudra Sain during the time of Krishna, the ruling king. In this area was from the Sain dynasty, and his name was Samudra Sain. we'll just describe a little bit about that pastime. There's the place. So Samudra Sen was in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, towards the end of the 10th canto, there's a description of Krishna going to visit King Bahulashva. You know that story? King Bahulashva, and there's also a Brahmana, Shrutadev. The description goes, Krishna knew that there was this devotee, king, who was so far away, he was very devoted, but never got a chance to get Krishna's association. So Krishna went to give his association to the king, King Bahulashva. In the course of travel, he visited many places where there are other kingdoms, and he was giving, but his mission, giving his association, but his main mission was to visit King Bahulashva. When he reached the kingdom of King Bahulashva, there was also another pure devotee, Brahmana, whose name was Shrutadev. And they both came before Krishna at the same time, both with the same desire, please come and bless my home. And the King Bahulashva, please come and bless my palace. Place your lotus feet within my palace and let me serve you. So what did Krishna do? He expanded himself into two Krishnas. Of course. And one of the expansions, just like in Dwaraka, he had many queens and expanded himself into different forms of Krishna to enter the palaces of each of the queens. So the description is given. What happened at the palace of King Bahulashva? What happened at the residence of King of the Brahmana Shrutadev? Very, very beautiful exchanges. Different according to their position and their particular relationship with him. But similarly, during Krishna's time, there was the king in the easterly direction. Bahulashva was in the northerly direction from Dwaraka and even Hastinapur. So we know this from Srimad Bhagavatam as well as Mahabharata, that at the time of the Rajasuya Yajna, there was an arrangement to invite other kings to come and attend the coronation of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But in order for all the kings to accept, Yudhisthira stayed in the capital city and the other four brothers went in the four directions to offer the opportunity for anyone to either offer tribute or to challenge in battle. You could say, no, I won't offer tribute to the Maharaj Yudhisthira. In that case, fight. And everyone had such love and admiration for Yudhisthira, they wanted to accept him as the emperor. So everyone gave their tribute, except Samudra Sen. Because Samudra Sen, the brother that went in the easterly direction was Bhima. And everyone, no one wanted to fight with Bhima. Everyone was ready, here, take my tribute. But Samudra Sen considered, I know Krishna's nature. If Krishna's devotee is in difficulty, Krishna will come. So instead of giving tribute to Bhima, he said, let's fight. And Bhima was very happy. Good. Finally, I'm getting a nice fight. But Samudra was fighting with such devotion. He wanted to see Krishna, that his sharp arrows were defeating the entire army. I'm saying Bhishma. Bhima. I keep saying Bhishma. Bhima. Bhima. Sorry. Bhima Sen and Samudra Sen. So Bhima. Bhima was getting defeated. And Bhima never gets defeated. So what did Bhima do when he was feeling himself overwhelmed with the power of Samudra Sen and his army? Krishna! Oh, Krishna, please help your dear devotee, me. It's in great difficulty. I never been defeated, but now I'm being defeated by this opposing king, Samudra. Krishna. So what did Krishna do? He came and presented himself in such a way on the battlefield that only Samudra could see him. Even Bhima couldn't see Krishna. But Samudra could see Krishna. And he was stunned in the midst of the battlefield. He dropped his weapons and was amazed at the beautiful form of Krishna. And being so pleased by the devotion of Samudra, Krishna then showed his form of Gauranga Mahaprabhu right on the battlefield between him and Bhima. And he fell to the ground unconscious. And Bhima saw him fall to the ground unconscious and thought, what's going on? Whatever is going on looks good. And Samudra then came with his arms extended when he regained consciousness and said, I now will offer you all tribute in honor of your brother Yudhisthira. He didn't explain what happened. He just surrendered to Bhima. And Bhima was very happy that the fight was over. Somehow Krishna protected me. I don't know how it happened. So the very place that that occurred, where that battle took place, was here at Samudra Ghar, where was the capital of Samudra Sen. And also, as we know, the name Samudra is the name of the ocean personified. Sometimes he's identified as Varuna, but also as Samudra. And the ocean personified, knowing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing his pastimes in Navadvip, but because his duty was in the ocean, he followed the course of the Ganga, came upstream all the way to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just to get his darshan. So therefore also the name Samudra Ghar. And changing, here we go. How is that working? Oh, that's why it's not working. Button on the off position. So this is the last place that we'll visit today. Some very, very wonderful places of Krishna's and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes in Koladweep. Srinavadweep Dham Ki
Jai.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki
Jai.
Gaur Pimanandi
Hari Hari Bol.
Makes you want to go there, huh? That's the idea. Okay, light. And power the projector. Just press the button twice. Power button twice. Oh, there it is on the side. Okay. So any questions or comments? We can open the curtains here, get some light in. Yes?
Maharaj, the deities in Mayapur are so beautiful, and they have their hands in many different poses. Is there any significance of
that?
Yes,
there is. I don't know the science. This pose is giving mercy. And sometimes it's, you know, one hand like this and one hand like this. This is double giving mercy. But the details of that, I don't know that science. Sorry. In the deity of Narahari Thakur, Pran Garanga, he has a very unique pose. One hand is like this, The other hand is like this. he's dancing. He's it's like a sassy mood of dancing. Very beautiful deity. Very merciful deity. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, I have actually a question from the morning Svagatam class.
Okay.
You mentioned very nicely that how we can create the bridge with the people outside the walls, like, you know, from the other communities.
Yeah.
We can find the common points and we can exchange.
Yeah.
So that they can appreciate and eventually become the ones.
Yeah.
So when we attempt to do that, then sometimes we may have to hide our identity. Especially like our association with, you know, being a devotee or being with the society, because sometimes people may have some preconceived notion because of which they, even though, you know, our common points will be something different, but still because of our association with the spiritual organization may intimidate them or may create some aversion. So how do we, like, what should we hide our identity?
No. You don't have to overtly flaunt it, but you don't have to hide your identity. You should not hide your identity. There are different approaches. At our Building Bridges conference, one devotee, there was a speaker, with Balaram Chandra. Do you know Balaram Chandra? A brahmachari. Well, now he's not. Now he's wearing white. But he resided in Vrindavan for some time. You know Balaram Chandra? So he described the first time he saw Bhakti Tirtha Swami outside of Vrindavan, because he was based in Vrindavan for a long time. And what he knew Bhakti Tirtha Swami as was this super athletic sannyasi that would come and dance and dance and jump and run, and every, you know, he'd be still running and everybody else would be exhausted for hours, kirtan, and then sit down and give a stunning class and then get up and more kirtan, just like, you know, carrying his danda, and very vigorous sannyasi. So Balaram Chandra, his service for some time was book distribution from vans. So they had a van party and they were visiting different places. So one time he happened to be in Maryland, and he heard that Bhakti Tirtha Swami was going to be speaking at a African-American, primarily Episcopalian church. So he was wondering, how's he going to pull this off? Because, you know, it's pews, and church pews, and all the formality. So instead of seeing him coming in his danda and sannyas attire, he was wearing his the attire of an African king, because when serving in Africa, he was made an African king. So he had a crown, and he had, you know, African, you know, traditional clothing, and he had his king's cane. People knew what that meant. So he went, you know, down the church aisle, and people were, you know, whoa. Even they were thinking, whoa. What to speak of Balaram Chandra thinking. when he got to the pulpit, the place where the speaker speaks, he made some initial statement. You may wonder why a person like me is standing in front of you speaking. Because they knew of him as representative of the Hare Krishna movement. But, you know, here he was in an African. So his message was something, I forget the detail of how Balaram Chandra described it. They may not even have known that he was Hare Krishna devotee, but his message was the essence. He didn't waffle at all with what his message was, but he didn't present himself as a member of the Hare Krishna movement. Although, in his heart, that's who he's Prabhupada's representative. In this audience and that audience, and depending upon the audience, he would present himself in a manner on that side of the bridge to the audience that would be happy to receive him. But the message didn't change. He didn't hide his identity. Because the identity is not the covering. The identity is the person within. That was his approach. It's not like, you know, anyone or everyone should do something like that, or can do something like that. But this very weekend is the American Academy of Religion conference in Washington, D.C. I know that because Anutma and Rabindra and Garuda and a group of devotees are participating in that. And I know that Garuda, well, I know that sometimes the devotees go in suit and tie. Sometimes the devotees go in, you know, yogi pants and kurta. Sometimes they go in dhoti and tilak. So they're not necessarily wearing the attire that they would wear at a Sunday feast program because of the audience. Or Drutakarma, for example, when he's presenting his, you know, his scientific work, he wears a tie and a shirt and a suit coat for the audience. In fact, he was considering taking sannyas, but decided it wouldn't be appropriate as a sannyasi because sometimes he has to do that. So instead, he's remaining in his vanaprastha, you know, saffron color, but not taking sannyas. That was his decision. But he's presenting himself as a scientist, but not concealing that his identity is a devotee of the personality of Godhead. In fact, they can turn it around the other way and say one of the ways that particularly from an Indian birth or being in an Indian body going to work wearing tilak because there are traditional people that wear markings of their religion, going to work wearing tilak is a way that you can preach, although without saying anything. So people will know, here's a person that's devoted to something. What that is, they may or may not have any idea. But you don't, you know, it's not hiding, you know, it's not advised to hide your identity. You are, you know, you be who you are. Something else? Yes.
Are there any compilations of Jayadeva?
I'm sure there are. I don't have any. I've not gone to the trouble to find them, but I'm sure they are. They are. With things like that, two things. Best to be careful, because there are authentic, and whatever the opposite of authentic, you might say, you know, not authentic versions of those things. And the second comment is that for us, primarily, our reference should be those literatures which have come in disciplic succession, and we know that the meanings of them, especially because there's commentary from our disciplic succession. Without the commentary of Bhagavad Gita, would we understand Bhagavad Gita? No. Prabhupada's statement is specifically to that effect. So, my recommendation to you personally, I mean to everybody in general, but and to you personally, is assiduously study Prabhupada's books. Read them many times. And be less interested in gathering a library of other things. Become very, very conversant in the translations and the purports of Srila Prabhupada. Not only then you're in safe territory, but the likelihood of awakening pure devotion will be the greatest. And that's what we want. Pure devotion. From one who's empowered to deliver pure devotion. Most likely to happen. Short lifetime. How much time is left? No saying, right? No saying. So best to be in a safe and sure position. Yes?
When I'm at work, sometimes I distribute the books at a higher pace. I was having a conversation. I gave one of those books to somebody who went to work. And there was a part in the higher pace where it talks about how, you know, the killers of the rabbits, the animals are stolen hearted and things. Now, this guy I was talking to, he's a hunter.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I was saying,
he didn't like that part, huh?
No. So I asked him, you know, what he thought of that, you know, about, you know, killing rabbits and deer. And his argument was that, you know, the thin the herd argument, it's good conservation to do so. And, you know, because they multiply like crazy. What would you say to something like
that? Well, you could say the same thing, you know, from how about the rabbits and deer perspective of the human beings? You better get rid of some of those. They breed and reproduce too much. Look at how the surface of the plant they're covering now. We got to do something to check that population. There are ways for sustainability besides hunting. And whatever the arrangement is, from our perspective, we take the authority of God as the guiding principle of our life, not something else. And when the instruction is, as in his scripture likely, is thou shalt not kill, okay. Not, well, yeah, but. The deer and rabbit population should be exempted because they breed too fast. Anything else? Okay. Anyone's happy? I hope. See the Prabhupada ki
jai.
Holiness Prabhupada Swami ki jai.